Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, is brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station, 91.9 FM, WCLK.
Coming up on this week's show, Upfront talks to Virginia Johnson, artistic director of the famed Dance Theater of Harlem. She discusses the company's upcoming Atlanta engagement and the legacy of the company's late founder, Arthur Mitchell. Rising filmmaker Quincy Ledbetter is here to chat about winning the BET Paramount Project Create film competition, where he won $1 million to shoot his project. And closing out the show is chef Jamika Pessoa, star of the Food Network's new series, Let's Eat. She stopped by the Upfront Studios this week to chat about the new TV project and more. I'll also be playing music from Sergio Mendez featuring John Legend, Fantasia, and India Irie, who celebrated a birthday this week. But first, here's Reva Blue with this week's casting buzz and entertainment news.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
All aboard. Hilton Casting is looking for an experienced male tailor for the new BET series, American Soul. The show will chronicle the rise of Soul Train creator Don Cornelius. The male tailor will be seen doing custom tailoring on a suit for the lead actor of the series. The tailor will also be seen cutting, stitching, and seaming fabric in these scenes. Filming will take place on Monday, October 15th. If this is you, please visit HiltonCasting.com/AmericanSoul-Taylor. In other related entertainment news, BET is going pink for the entire month of October, beginning with its original BET Her movie, Her Only Choice. It tells the story of a woman who, after years of infertility, becomes pregnant only to be diagnosed with a life-altering disease. She must make a choice, either fight for her life or sacrifice her child's. It airs Saturday, October 6th at 9 p.m. In addition to the movie, the second annual BET Her Fights Breast Cancer Special airs on Sunday, October 7th at 7 p.m. This year's program will feature show-stopping performances from Kelly Price, Estelle, Luke James, Corin Hawthorne, and The Walls Group. Go to WCLK.com for more information. That's this week's Casting Buzz and Entertainment News. I'm Reva Blue.
Programming on Jazz 91.9 WCLK is made possible in part by Skylink Express, presenting Jazz and Jokes on Sunday, October 7th from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. at North Lake Mall parking lot at 4800 Briarcliff Road. Your lawn chairs are welcome. Performers include national artists Julian Vaughn, Eric Darius, and Marcus Johnson. Vendors will be on site, including food, arts and crafts, and more. More information available at Skylink777.com or at 404-488-4200.
Please, baby, don't fall in love with me. Please, baby,
Coleman Domingo, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
The Dance Theater of Harlem is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year and will be at Atlanta's Cobb Energy Performing Arts Center next weekend. I got a chance to chat with the company's artistic director, Virginia Johnson, about the show and what fans can expect. She also opens up about the legacy of the company's founder, Arthur Mitchell, who recently passed away. Here's our conversation. Well, Virginia Johnson, welcome to Upfront. How are you?
I'm great, and thanks so much for this opportunity to talk about Dance Theater of Harlem.
Yeah, this is truly an honor to chat with you. I know that you guys are gearing up to come to Atlanta next weekend, October 13th through the 14th at the Cobb Energy Center, and we're so happy to have you guys back in the city. I think I caught you maybe 2 years ago when you guys were performing there, and I was so excited to know that you guys were coming back to Atlanta, so we're looking forward to it.
Thank you. It's a beautiful theater, and it was a very special audience that when we were performing in Atlanta last time, and I'm looking forward to meeting that audience again.
So you guys are in the midst of celebrating your 50th anniversary. Where did all the time go? Because you don't think that 50 years, I mean, you don't think it would go by so quickly, but it's gone by very fast.
It absolutely has. You know, I'm actually a founding member of Dance Theatre of Harlem, so when I think of that number, 50, I can't understand it. I don't understand it in any way, shape, or form, but it has been a glorious 50 years. Dance Theatre of Harlem was created by Arthur Mitchell and Carl Shook for a lot of reasons, but one of the main things was to get people to understand that this art form of ballet is not something that belongs to one group of people or is not something that people can't relate to, but it's something that really is exciting to everyone. Dance Theatre of Harlem is a multicultural ballet company, and we do all kinds of works. The program in Atlanta is especially symbolizes that. We're doing a very mixed program, and the highlight for me of this performance at the Kopp Center is that we're going to be performing with the Spelman Glee Club, a piece called Change, which was choreographed by Diane McIntyre. And it's a piece that really reflects the African-American heritage in America. It's a piece that celebrates the strength of women. It's a ballet work unlike anything that you've seen in any other ballet theater.
Yeah, and I want to say that last time that I did see you guys, they were a part of that performance as well, and it you're right, it was amazing to see the movement, but then to also hear these beautiful voices in the background providing the music for the movement. I also think that you guys, I remember it correctly, if I'm correct, but you guys did sort of a tribute to James Brown that was just had everyone moving, you know,
yes,
in their seats.
So, absolutely.
Are we going to have anything else like that as well as part of the program for next weekend?
Sure. So the program is actually made up of four different ballets. The first work was created by our resident choreographer, Robert Garland. And the music is Bach, but the movement is all us. It is a way of fusing what ballet does with contemporary social dancing. And so it really brings in something that's very reflective, using the rhythms that you don't necessarily think of are there in Bach, using those rhythms and making it something that everybody wants to move to. We have a beautiful work called Adagietto, which is a trio. It's kind of a love story between three dancers. And the last work on the program is Vessels, which was choreographed by Darrell Grand Moultrie. And it's really a dynamic, pure dance work that shows the power of these dancers, their physical prowess.
Yeah. Now, the company, when I was doing some research, was started was sort of inspired by the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King in 1968. Do you find that with all of the issues that are taking place around the country right now, women's issues, equality issues, do you try to infuse some of that into the work that you guys are putting out there?
You know, I think one of the things that's really powerful about Dance Theatre of Harlem, it is about expressing who we are as people and being able to having the platform to do that and having the idea that we are a strong individual group of people who have contributed so much to this country, that our presence on the stage is something that everybody needs to be proud of. The thing is, when Arthur Mitchell created Dance Theatre of Harlem, it was a pretty dark time in the country, and he wanted to create a sense of optimism, a sense of possibility. And so he opened a school in Harlem so that young people could change their lives through the discipline and focus of studying dance. That's something that's evergreen. You know, you have to commit to something. You have to say, this means something to me, and I'm going to put myself into it fully. And that's what you have to do as a dancer. So when you see these beautiful dancers on the stage, you understand that there's a lifetime of commitment, but there's also a way to get there through dance. I think the thing about the modern era, it's so very much like the 1960s, and in a way that's a little bit disappointing that we're repeating some of the things that have happened in the past, but we are moving forward, and Dance Theatre of Harlem is about moving that forward.
Now, the company founder, as you mentioned, Arthur Mitchell, recently passed away. What is your fondest memory of him? Again, you alluded to being one of the company founders, so you've been with him for a very long time. What is your fondest memory of him?
He was a dynamic visionary. He knew that he was doing something that no one thought was possible, and he had the energy and the strength to push it forward. So in lots of ways, he was a tough taskmaster, and it was hard working for him, but it was always something that you believed in to make a difference, to change. So I can remember being terrified of him in the studio, but so much in awe of him as a human being.
What do you think will be his enduring legacy?
One of the things that people need to understand is that Arthur Mitchell is the person way long before Misty Copeland who said, yes, black people belong in ballet. Black people can do ballet at the highest level. I'm going to create a company. I'm going to create the opportunity for all of us to be in this art form.
Yeah. Now, you've been with the company for a very long time. You've been the artistic director, I believe, since 2009, correct?
It's 2010, yes.
2010. Okay, so we're almost reaching a 10-year mark. Where do you plan to take the company, let's say, for the next 10 years?
So, you know, the thing that's really important about Dance Theatre of Harlem is that we have this very strong message about empowerment through the arts. Dance Theatre of Harlem is a touring company. That means that we don't sit down in one city and do 5 or 6 performance series in a year. We actually take this message around the country and around the world. It's something that I believe in is the most important part of our mission, to let people who may not be exposed to the arts have an experience that will change their lives. And I think Dance Theatre of Harlem will continue to do that at a higher level as we move forward over the next 10 years.
Yeah. Well, Virginia Johnson, thank you so much for being a guest today on Upfront. Again, Dance Theatre of Harlem will be in our fair city next weekend, October 13th through the 14th at the Cobb Energy Performing Arts Center. You can get more information about that at WCLK.com. Good luck on your event tonight, and we can't wait to see you guys next weekend.
I can't wait to be there. Thank you.
Programming on WCLK is made possible in part by St. James Live. St. James Live presents Smooth Sundays with smooth jazz trombonist Buff Dillard, October the 7th. Buff has opened for Boney James, Alex Bunyong, and Shirley Caesar. He has also performed with the Count Basie Big Band. Buff Dillard, live at St. James on Sunday, October the 7th. Doors open at 6 p.m., showtime at 7 p.m. St. James Live is located at 3220 Butner Road in Atlanta. Ticket information is available at stjamesliveatl.com.
For someone like him, and all this time I thought that he was just a friend,
but not just anybody can touch my body.
And then he came along.
Hey, what's up? It's Nikki Gilbert from Brownstone, singer, actress, writer, producers, and star of the new film Social Conflict. I am hanging out up front with Ray Cornelius on WCLK.
My next guest is rising filmmaker Quincy Ledbetter. He's an award-winning photographer and musician who was recently crowned the winner of BET and Paramount's Project Create film competition, where he has been granted the opportunity to produce a film with a $1 million budget. I caught up with him this week to chat about his newfound success and much more. Quincy Ledbetter, welcome to Upfront. How are you?
Hi, I'm well. Thank you for having me on.
No problem. Congratulations on being the winner of the BET Paramount Project Create. You've been given the chance to produce your film with a $1 million budget. How exciting is that?
Yeah. It's super exciting. You know, I've been at this for, I've been a filmmaker and for like 19 years. So like this is, it's still pretty surreal. You know, it hasn't really hit me yet, you know, but it feels amazing. It's great to have won and great to have this opportunity.
Yeah. Let's start from the beginning. How did you hear about this contest?
So I wrote a film called Alu the Dreamer, and it felt really special. Felt like, you know, some of my best work. You know, I've written a couple of screenplays before. And I went online and I started looking for opportunities to submit it to film festivals and screenwriting competitions and stuff like that. And I came across the Project Create opportunity, and I was like, oh, this is right up my alley. And I think it was like a couple of days before the deadline, if memory serves correct. And I submitted it and kind of forgot about it because I submit to a lot of different things, you know. And then later on, like I want to say, you know, I don't remember the exact amount of time, but later on I found out that I made it to the top 50. And then I made it to the top 10 and then the top 5. And now here we are, you know?
Yeah, you're the winner. So what were your thoughts when you found out that you won? What was going through your mind?
A lot of things went through my mind. I think the biggest thing that went through my mind is how long I've been working for an opportunity like this. Like I said, the first soiree I had into filmmaking was 19 years ago. And that, when they announced my name, when they told us that I had won, I just immediately flashed back to the first time I was on a set and the first time, like, I picked up a camera and the first time I started editing. And I just, all that stuff came back to me all at once. And it was pretty overwhelming, you know. It was kind of surreal. And it still feels really surreal. Like, I'm still sort of in a state of shock and disbelief, but I'm ready for the challenge ahead, you know?
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about the film?
Yeah. So Alu the Dreamer is a film about a world where mankind has been unable to dream for 3 decades. And then a government agent finds a young man living in the projects who has suddenly started dreaming again. So it's a sci-fi drama, kind of a surrealist sci-fi drama.
How do you think this will, and I kind of already know the answer, but how do you think this will impact your career?
Well, I hope that this leads to an opportunity to make more films, because that's the goal, you know, to make films and television, you know. The goal is to write and direct film and television. So my goal is to, like, use this as a springboard for more opportunities like it, you know. I have to knock this out of the park so that they trust me to do even more, and more people start to trust me to do more for them. So hopefully it leads to that at the very least. Thinking big picture, I want to inspire people like me to do whatever their dream is, you know, be it, you know, being a filmmaker, artist, musician, or even like an accountant or whatever. I just want people to see me moving so that they can be inspired by it. And so that can, in and of itself, like, move the culture forward. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, totally makes sense.
Yeah.
So you've worked on a number of other shows for NPR. You're actually the video director and senior video editor for HuffPost. How did those opportunities prepare you for this one?
Well, the great thing about, you know, my time at NPR and my time here at HuffPost is that I get to make stuff every day. I get to, like, work on short films. I get to shoot. I get to edit, you know, mostly in the documentary space. But, you know, the budgets are small on the projects that we work on. So it taught me how to be scrappy. You know, it's like, we don't have any money to do this big thing. How do we do it? That's the biggest challenge of filmmaking. So I got a chance to, like, work on my chops, you know, dealing with those kinds of challenges, working at NPR and working at HuffPost and the other digital media companies where I've worked. And that in and of itself helped me in this competition, because they gave us an opportunity to shoot a proof of concept of our film. And we had a small budget to do it, but I was able to use those skills to make my film seem bigger than it was. You know what I mean? So my success in this competition and my success moving forward in my career is directly related to my experience working at NPR and HuffPost and these other digital media companies that I've been in.
Yeah. So I have to ask you, what advice would you give to a young person that's out there listening to this interview that may be right where you are, or has been, like you said, waiting for 19 years for that big moment to happen? What advice would you give to that person?
Yeah. So there's a couple of key things that I see people do or not do that holds them back from reaching, you know, their goal. The first thing is giving themselves a deadline. A lot of times I've heard people say, if I haven't achieved this thing by the time I'm 25, then I'm just going to stop. If you say that, then you may as well stop right now, you know, because that in and of itself shows that you don't really want it. You just, you know, are reaching for something. Your motives are flawed, you know? And that leads me to my next point. You just cannot stop. You cannot stop. There's so many reasons to not do what you want to do. And so many people that are going to tell you not to do what you want to do. You just have to be tenacious. Even if you don't believe in yourself, you just have to realize that this is something that you want, and you just have to continue to go for it. Because, you know, I'm 38, you know? So I got started like in the game a little late, but I did not stop. And that's the only reason where I am right now. And the last thing is the most important. Yeah. What I do is I boil things down to, I'm either going to do this or I'm not going to do it. You know? So at times when I'm feeling lazy or at times when I'm feeling not confident in myself, which is pretty often, I break it down simple. I'm either going to work to be a filmmaker or I'm going to not, you know? And when you put it that simply to yourself, then the decision is easy because there's no other option for me to, you know, to achieve this goal. I have to be it. I have to do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Like if you want to be a musician and you're too lazy to work towards being a musician, you have to ask yourself, I'm either going to work to be a musician or I'm going to not work to be a musician. And when you put it to yourself that easily, then the choice is very clear, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing that has helped me because I deal with a lot of like confidence issues and there's a lot of obstacles in getting this far. And I'm not even like really, when you think about it, I'm not even really that far. You know, this is just my first film that I'm getting a chance to do. I want to make 100 films, you know? But breaking it down that easy, I'm either going to be a filmmaker or I'm going to not be a filmmaker. And I always choose the former, you know?
Well, Quincy Ledbetter, thank you so much for that word of advice. Good notes. I was taking notes myself and, good. That was amazing. And you're absolutely right. It's either you're going to do this or you're not. And you definitely have to believe in yourself. Again, congratulations on being the winner of BET and Paramount's Project Create. And we can't wait to see the film when it comes out. So thank you so much for this time with you, and good luck.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Programming on Jazz 91.9 WCLK is made possible in part by the Fusion Chamber Ensemble, presenting its opening season concert, Metamorphosis, on Sunday, October 7th at 5 p.m. at Emory University Performing Arts Studio. Join founding artists Karen Banks, Gerald Freeman, Christopher Mosley, and friends for an evening of classical, jazz, original compositions, and spoken word. Tickets available at Eventbrite.com. And more information at FusionConcertATL.com.
I ain't gonna lie, boy, you got me out of my mind in L-O-V-E. I go crazy when you love me. Got me acting a mess. Even got the nerve to say I'm better than my mama's tolerance. Cornbread.
Hey y'all, what's going on? It's your boy Devon Franklin, author of the new book, The Hollywood Commandments, and you're listening to Upfront with your boy Ray Cornelius. Stay right here.
My last guest is Chef Jamika Pessoa, star of the Food Network's newest series, Let's Eat. The former reality star and celebrity chef stopped by Upfront this week to chat about her new passion project, which is available now on the Food Network app. She also talks holiday dishes and how faith has played a major role in her success.
Chef Jamika, welcome to Upfront. How are you?
I am wonderful. Thank you for having me, Ray.
I'm so happy to have you here. Diane Larche hit me up and said, hey, I have this amazing chef who's in town. We got to get her on the show. Did a little background and a little research, and I was like, absolutely.
Well, I'm grateful to be here.
I forgot to tell her to have you bring some food, though.
Well, you know what? I get that request. When people hear chef, they're like, oh, what'd you cook? I'm like, I don't have a rolling cart of food and cupcakes in my purse. But next time, I got you, boo. Next time. But we're going to talk about food. I'm going to make you really hungry.
Yeah,
how about that?
Yeah, and I'm starving right about now. Gotta say, you're currently the only African-American female chef on the Food Network, correct?
Is that no, right? Now, I won't say the only.
Okay.
I am one of... I can't even say newest because I started out with Food Network back in 2009 when I did a competition show, and we've just kind of parlayed and kept working in the industry, kept going, and now I'm hosting a show called Let's Eat that's on the Food Network app. So I won't claim the title as the only.
Right.
There's been wonderful women of color that have come before me, so, and they're still there.
Let's talk about this journey into the world of culinary arts because you didn't start off doing that? You were a marketing executive,
I
right?
I started out corporate. I went to college, four-year university in business, and I said I was going to work the room and have meetings and wear a suit. And I got there, and I was like, I don't like any of this. They didn't tell me. It's like it was like meeting after meeting, and I'm stuck at a desk. You just know, sitting there, I just felt like I am not being fulfilled. I'm more talented than being chained to a desk answering phones. There was no glory in what I was doing. And I'm like, I have to make a change. And kind of when you put that out there in the universe, then the change comes to you. And the company I was working with in Atlanta, they started laying a lot of people off. Mm. And because it got changing clients and things like that. And they gave me the option. They said, we can demote you. You'll stay. Or you can just basically pack your bags and go. And in that second, I heard this voice say, go. And I was like, wait a minute, who said that? And I was just like, I think I'm going to go. And everybody looked at me like I was crazy. But you just know, I knew in that moment there was so much more. And cooking was always my passion. So the next week I went to culinary school, signed up, got accepted. And that moment I put on those baggy chef coat and the hat. And I was like, this is where I'm supposed to be. I came alive.
I was going to ask you, what was there a moment where you was just like, okay, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life?
Well, yeah, because I grew up cooking with my grandmother. So, and I just knew how she could change the whole vibe of everybody. It didn't matter what kind of day you had. When she brought food to the table, everybody was happy. And I'm like, that is crowd control like none other. I love that. And I just wanted to bring that to people. I always loved cooking, but I never really considered it as a career. But then I was like, I got to do something. So, and then that's how I said, let me just pursue my passion. And yeah. Culinary school got it. And I started working in the industry and then started my catering business.
So, Gata, how describe that transition from leaving corporate America and pursue? Because we hear that all the time. Mm-hmm. It's like, I pursue my passion and I'm here.
And it sounds so easy and flowery and fun.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, no. Because first of all, you get into that and you question everything because the money's going to change. Everybody around you is going to look at you like, are you crazy? I mean, keep in mind, I had a four-year degree. I was still paying that off. And my parents were like, we sent you to a university and now you want to be a cook? They could not understand that concept. So I say when people start calling you crazy and laughing at it, then you keep going because it won't make sense until you show them that you're capable of doing it. So it was just, I knew I was taking a pay cut. I knew that it was a totally different world because cooking in your mama's kitchen and going into a giant commercial kitchen, totally different. But it's when you know you're in the right place, you just kind of learn and people will help you along the way and you just find your groove. And I found my niche in the kitchen.
Yeah. Let's talk about that competition series and how that sort of changed the trajectory, I can't say that word, of your career.
Well, when I started my catering business and I was cooking for various people and celebrities in Atlanta. And then I started doing the local morning news and people were like, you're so good on TV. You should do one of those shows. And at that time, it wasn't a lot of competition shows like how you see now. And I was like, maybe, I guess. I auditioned for one and they called me back. It was like, can you come do Next Food Network Star? And I didn't know what I was signing up for. You sign up for a reality show. It's such a big machine that you just kind of fall into place. And it's a competition. You have to cook. You have to show your personality. The judges are watching you. You have millions of people watching you. You're now being known when you walk outside your door. Like that is like, it was the most amazing roller coaster ride I'd ever been on. And I came in fourth in that competition out of 10 people, having beat millions of people that applied. And I didn't win, but I'm like, I still came out a winner. I mean, everybody got to see who I was a person, see my food. They loved me. And it was just like, I like this. I'm going to keep going with it. So I tell people, even though they didn't call my name as the winner, it doesn't mean I didn't win. Because I still kept going in my career and doing other network shows. And then Food Network came full circle. And now they call me back to do a show with them. That's how things work.
And we were talking offline about this whole idea of competition. We're so bombarded every day with these types of shows where you're competing against mm-hmm. others. But what I've found in doing what I do is that your competition should be with yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And not with
it's
others.
A mental game. And I think that's how the world, particularly at this point, we are in a world where everybody is just at odds with one another. And it's like, I got to beat you to get here and get to the top. And I used to have that mentality. And now I've gotten older and more mature in the game. And I realize there's space for everybody to win. Like, that's really how it's designed. You find what you're good at and you win at that. There's plenty of space at the top. And you start competing with other people. You start looking at what they're doing and you're comparing yourself. And then you're not registering and learning and loving who you are. So I'm like, I need to stay in my lane, in my kitchen, look in my pot and worry about what I'm cooking. I can't look at anybody else because I'm going to lose the sense of who Chef Jamaica is.
Yeah. Now, we're seeing more faces of color in this industry. Mm-hmm. Have we turned a corner, do you think?
And that's just so the crazy thing, because we're in the kitchen. I mean, we are in restaurants, but we don't get the notoriety on the large scale, on the big stage, like on TV. And I've encountered so many people. Like, I remember when I first walked in the kitchen, and as a woman of color, I remember somebody saying, oh, she gonna fry some chicken. Like, it's still the mentality of Black people can only do soul food, can only fry something. And I turned around and I said, oh yes, honey, I can fry some chicken, but I'm also been trained classically in Austria and Italy, so I can make some pasta for you. I ran down the gamut, but you gotta prove yourself. And I feel like we have turned the corner, because now is a great time for women, now is a great time for minorities, and we can really showcase that we're so much more than the box that people try to put us in. Because I can do soul food, I can do Caribbean food, that's my background. I can do it all, and I'll show you in the kitchen. So don't be mad I didn't bring you any food, but I still love you.
How good does that look,
it's
you guys?
So good.
Whoa.
Let's get to the good stuff.
My name is Stuart O'Keefe.
Hey, I'm Brandy Malloy. I am Jamaica Pessoa.
Look at that.
Whoa. Grew up in Ireland, in case you haven't heard.
Noodles, meat, potatoes, cheese.
I have a really odd background. Caribbean and country all mixed in one. I live in Georgia. I'm a peach.
I grew up in Hawaii. This is taking me back to beach bonfires.
Get in, get in.
When we are together, I feel like we're at home. Let's eat. It's not about let's make this fancy thing. That was almost too easy. Let's have fun. Let's break bread.
Give it a whack.
There we go.
Wow, that's impressive.
It's about family, friends, and just coming together.
Food should be fun. It shouldn't be intimidating. Look how beautiful that is.
Show me this crazy shake.
More, more, more. Is there anything in my teeth? Cooking can be fun.
Are you serious?
He likes it. You absolutely can be a chef in your own kitchen.
You guys ready for a slice?
We are breaking ground here.
So that's just a snippet from your new show, Let's Eat. How exciting is this for you?
Oh, wow. Let's Eat. I tell people it's the most delicious 30 minutes that you will have in the kitchen. I'm the co-host, and it's three of us, and we all bring something different to the table. So me, I am just silly and fun. I call myself the life of the party. That's the name of my business. Like, I really just love to have fun in the kitchen, and my recipes really resemble that. So they're fun. They're easy. I mean, we can go anywhere from cocktails to family dinner time, desserts, you name it. Like, that's what the show brings. And it's on the Food Network app, so you don't have to worry about setting a DVR and catching it. It's on your phone. I am in your back pocket pretty much any time of the day. Yeah. On your mobile device. So it's such a great, I love doing the shows. I'm really proud of this project.
Now, speaking of food, we're about to go into the holiday season. It's mm-hmm. crazy. As soon as October gets here,
where did the time go?
It's Halloween.
I don't know.
Thanksgiving, Christmas, you know, Hanukkah, whatever. And then it's like, bam, Happy New Year.
Yeah.
So let's talk about an item that maybe people can add to their menu this holiday season that maybe people haven't thought about before.
Oh, goodness. I encourage people. I mean, we have our traditional, like for Thanksgiving, the turkey. If you're in the South, you got your greens, you got your dressing or stuffing, depending on which region you live in. But I encourage people to eat differently this year, kind of go into different cuisines and different cultures. So maybe you have like a rack of lamb, you have Mediterranean style, you put some couscous in there. The traditions are great, but there's so much more that we're missing out on that we can eat. And I love how I kind of fuse my cultural background into things. So I use what people are familiar with. So like in the South, we have like candied yams, but I bring my Caribbean flair to it and add like mango and coconut rum sauce.
Ooh.
So you can kind of take what...
Wait. Stop.
Okay,
say
he's
that
like,
again.
Pause on that. Wait.
Say that again?
It's candied yams. So you have your sweet potatoes and it's known for that sticky, ooey, gooey, sweet sauce.
Yeah.
But I saute fresh mango and then do a coconut rum sauce. So I reduce it until it gets, that's the sweet sticky sauce.
Ooh.
Is coconut rum in there.
Okay.
So I encourage you, take what people are familiar with, but just add a little more flair to it, because people will show up to that table like, oh, this is nice. Because I mean, pretty much tell me, I mean, auntie's potato salad kind of gets a little old after like the 15th year.
This is
so
true.
Yeah, just jazz it up a little. Put in some other cultures, different cuisines. It will really make a difference this holiday.
Yeah. Now let's talk about some soul food. And what I mean by that is faith and food, and how faith has played a role in your career.
Wow, that it's such a big deal to me, because I tell people I get your attention with the food, but I know I was put on this earth to really feed your soul. And I feel like what I've done and what I'm doing, what I'm going through, it's an inspiration, because I want somebody to look and listen to my story. And it doesn't even have to be, you don't have to be a chef. You don't have to worry about cooking. It's just a matter of, if she can take that leap of faith and pursue her dream, why can't I do it? Because I think so many people get stuck in that questions in their mind, like, is it the right time? I can't afford this. What about this? You just have to go for it. Because if not, you want to regret your entire life, like, I could have, and look at somebody else do it. You could be standing right next to them, if not in front of them. So my faith has been such, and it still is, such a big role in this journey. Because I couldn't get out of bed every day without God help me do this and do that. Because I've been placed now in so many different arenas next to the most amazing top chefs running restaurants, books, you name it. And I'm standing right next to them. And you can't stand next to somebody that you're like, oh my God, I look up to you, and still hold your back up strong. So it's nothing but faith, because God is like, if I put you next to that person, then you can stand right next to them and talk your game too. So you just got to keep that in your mind. Even when you think you're not qualified to be in an arena, you're still qualified. God will put you there. So that's how my career has just been getting bigger and bigger. I never thought about being on TV, and I'm like, look at me now.
Wow.
Never thought about that.
Well, Chef Jamika Paseo, I'm saying
Paseo.
Thank you so much for being a guest today on Upfront.
You.
And much success to you. And Let's Eat. Again, that is available on the Food Network app, and you can download that information and check her out.
Yeah.
Check out the show. And how can our listeners follow you on social media?
Well, they can get any of my recipes at chefjamika.com. And then you guys got to follow me, any social media platform, at Chef Jamika. That's J-A-M-I-K-A. And I say, anytime you make one of my recipes, you got to tag me in it, because I got to see how you're doing me good.
Yeah. Again, thank you so much, and thanks for being here.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, that'll do it for this week's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, Virginia Johnson, Quincy Ledbetter, and Chef Jamika Paseo. I'd also like to thank my engineer, Jami Wellman, and you. Please join us next Saturday, October 13th at 9 a.m. for another exciting edition of Upfront. You can also keep up with us on Instagram at UpfrontTheShow. Happy Saturday, Atlanta. If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, inside Atlanta's entertainment industry, has been brought to you by Atlanta's Jazz Station 91.9 FM WCLK, an NPR member-supported station.